Reiko here, your friendly neighborhood witch. Now, I know what you're thinking, but you're safe here. It's okay to not be okay. And self-love is always going to be the best love. Self-care is going to be the best care. Now, join me as we let out some steam and become a little less stress and more carefree. Come join me over our weekend detox and let's detox together, because we always want to protect our energy. Hello, 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 grand risings, great blessings, whatever time it is that you are listening to this podcast. Welcome to Reiku's Weekend Detox, formerly known as Reiku's Sunday Detox. I appreciate you guys for tuning in for another beautiful, beautiful week. And in honor of Mental Health Awareness Month, it is also Military Mental Health Awareness Month. I am here today with a very special, special guest that wanted to join your neighborhood friendly witch today to talk about his experiences in the military, before the military, and after the military. He is a retired vet at this time, and I actually don't want to spend too much time talking about myself here, so let's actually introduce my guests. Hi, hi, hi. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Mid-30s.
So, if you guys don't know, Kyle is actually one of my oldest and dearest friends. He was actually my very first boyfriend, my first love, and we are still very close and connected now. He's actually the person, at the end of the day, if any of my future partners have a problem with, unfortunately, I'm going to pick him every time, because this man is actually, in a way, gone to war mentally with me, spiritually with me, gone through a lot of shit with me. Like, he knows way too much. It's to the point where we have such a bond. It's not to the point where we will ever cross that bridge in a relationship ever again, but we have such a bond with each other that the only way we gonna leave each other's lives at this point is by death. Exactly, a whole accomplice nationwide. I just always have to say this. Unfortunately, though, he does not want to show his face, because that is his personal choice. I did give him an option, so you guys are going to be graced with his lovely voice today. So yes, he is in his mid-30s, and he's been in the military. How long were you in the military, Kyle?
I was in the military for 6 years.
For 6 years?
2010 to 2016.
All right. So the question I go ahead and ask you is this, like, what made you join the military?
Lack of jobs available at the time where I was at.
Of course, of course. And typically that's what makes most people join the military, correct?
More or less, some people just want to get away from their toxic parents, you know, toxic situation. You know, they don't have any other option because they don't see another option.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree. So the biggest thing that I basically will go ahead and say is this. At the time that you joined the military, me and you were still dating at the time. How did that make you feel about leaving a situation? Well, before I ask that question, let me give a backstory on why I'm asking this question. At this time, when you met me, you were actually on the verge of leaving anyway. So you weren't going to stay in town, and then you met me, and then you decided to stay because of me. So going into military, in the military aspect, knowing that you were going to have to leave me for a while, how did that make you feel? What kind of anxiety feelings that you had joining the military and signing up for the military? Did you have any regrets? Did you have any fears? Tell me a little bit about your experience enlisting.
Yeah, typical anxiety of leaving a known situation for something unknown. You know, that's pretty standard. As far as leaving you, it kind of, okay, strive and try harder, because, you know, hey, at the end of this, I get to, you know, see my girlfriend at the time, and go from there with everything, and continue on.
Well,
I forgot the rest of your question.
I mean, like, how did it make you feel knowing that you were going to be joining the military, have to be away from me? I know that they have, at one point in time, that you were telling me while you were practicing and you know, getting fit before joining, that they kept making, like, jokes about, you know, we won't last and this, that, and the other, going in, you going into the military.
Jody coming into the picture and stealing your girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that I think me and you made jokes because we were watching a lot of military movies leading up to that time. Full Metal Jacket, things of that nature.
Full Metal Jacket, yeah, that, you know, is one of those. Then you have Jarhead, which was a little more relevant due to recent times. Like, you know, the drill instructors can't exactly hit you and push you around like they used to, which, you know, makes for people still talking back and running their mouths.
Yeah, so we talked about the anxiety because of, you know, them saying Jody coming to steal your girl and all that other stuff. I know that with me and stuff, I sat here and I told you I would write you every single day. And I actually, ironically enough, for the longest, I kept a lot of those letters. I kept a lot of those pictures. We were drawing to each other. And despite the fact that being you hate your handwriting, because your handwriting wasn't the best. we sat here and I kept writing him because I knew at the end of the day that was one of those things. And I mean, it's really hard mentally on people who are dating someone in the military. That first introduction into the military for that person who's potentially going to be a spouse or a girlfriend, boot camp and basic training is the startup.
Yeah, it's definitely a shock to most civilians that, you know, never really interacted with military or had military family.
Yeah, and I mean, like, with me, in my particular case, I was blessed because both my parents were in the military prior to 9/11. Before 9/11. And the thing is, it's just like, with you, I know that you had a lot of anxiety the last couple nights leading up to now. I know that you were sitting here, once they say, yeah, we're going to ship you out, you kept waiting for a shipment date, and I know you had a lot of anxiety then, but you also had a lot of things that you wasn't discussing with me at that time. Was it just mainly anxiety? Was it depression? What was, like, some of the fears and thoughts that were going through your head?
There's a lot. You know, the biggest thing was probably anxiety of the unknown. You know, making sure I was, you know, as ready as I could make myself before going, so that way it wasn't so tough on me, you know, and then worrying about everything, you know, at the time it was your car, you know, making sure you could get back and forth to work, what, you know, what you were eating, you know, how I was going to be able to get a hold of you. You know, I think I called you three times the entire 10 weeks of basic, because that's when I had access to a phone. Nowadays, they sit on the weekend on their phone or after 5 o'clock.
So that's actually something I've been hearing a lot now, is that a lot of the members now going into basic training, they're basically able to have access to a phone, where back in the day, that was something they weren't able to do. Hello, Miss Lola. I realized that a lot of people were having, a lot of the older people that's been in the military for longer are a lot upset with how the basic training has became and how lax it has became.
It's rather frustrating because, you know, the Army expects one standard of soldier, not, you know, weekend warrior type respect towards the superior enlisted and so officers. So that it's not there. The, you know, everything that's instilled from the start of basic of you listen and do what you're told when you're told it, not when you feel like it. You don't talk back, you don't talk bad, you know. Other mental challenges for a lot of the youth these days, you know, talking under 21s, and anybody that's older, you know, that's been in the workforce, you know, might have a clue as to the similarities.
Yeah, so I could say, honestly, with you in that particular case, I think a lot of your writing, and you know I have very good memory. I've always been the one that has always had good memory out of the two of us, is that in your writing, you definitely stressed about how you were just tired and over it. And you were like, you were pushing through, and you were just trying to go through a lot of stuff.
And a lot of it had to do with, like I said, the younger kids at the time. You know, they were, oh, I'm doing National Guard or Reserve, and they just didn't have the same mental attitude as those who went active duty to sit there and actually... So, you know, there's a lot of name-calling. For me, that was... All I kept thinking was, hey, you know, I've heard that for like 5 years now. Can you come up with something better, or is your vocabulary that limited? And so that's more where I got to mentally with it, because it's a mind game. They want to break you down and build you back up so you can handle stressful situations.
Yeah. Now, after your basic training, you did come back a little bit different, and I definitely stated that too a lot. There was a brief moment that me and you did link back up and everything else like that. And you just, I got to, you know, travel up to, what was it, Kentucky? Fort Knox. And having to go to, like, this one horse town with your dad and to watch you graduate. And it was an experience. It was the first time of seeing you after you being away for, like, weeks. At that time, what was the emotions that you were feeling at that time? I know for me, I was excited. I was exhausted. I was like, oh, I finally get to see you. I haven't got to talk to my best friend forever. And like at this point, we were like thick as thieves at that point. We done went through like hell and back. So like a few times. And it's like, for me, it was just like, I was excited. I was proud of you. I remember I was writing you all the time how proud I was of you, even if I already told you, like, from the straight up, like, I would never marry anybody in the military because my parents were in the military. And it ended up turning around, and we were almost like, I think you proposed to me before you joined the military.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks before I shipped out.
Yeah. And then ultimately, I think a lot of miscommunication between us end up falling because I let both my parents and your parents kind of was like, no, don't jump into getting married. Because I was like, what, 18, 19 at the time? I was a baby. I was not even, I think I was 18. I wasn't fully 18, though. Like, I was like freshly 18. So.
Yeah.
I met this guy when I was like just about to turn 16 years old. So it is what it is. And it you know.
Thank God for statute of limitations.
and it's to the point where now, like, my parents allowed us to date. They were okay with us dating. And everything else like that, because Kyle was always very, very respectful. But I think in the same way, they didn't want us to rush into marriage because of the military, and they discouraged me. Like, I basically came to you and said, both our parents think that we should live together before getting married. And I think you kind of took that as, oh, she doesn't want to marry me. And then... I didn't get the cold feet, but we definitely had a miscommunication, and then you went to A school for a while, and we were still communicating, but then I called you one day crying because I had a sense something was wrong. And I already realized that there was some distance between us, and I think at that point you just kind of took it as I didn't want to be with you, and I was like, that was not the case at all.
There was definitely miscommunication, and I, like you said, I had kind of changed from into a different person. Wasn't the same in an aspect,
but, yeah,
you know, everything moves forward. You're gonna, only thing constant is change.
Exactly. And that's something both of us always just explained to each other growing up. Like, we basically grew up together, and that's the reason why I would never like leave this kid ever. Like, he's not allowed to leave. Like, at this point, you know too much. At this point I know about your daughter and your wife. Your wife has met me, so at this point, we're like, you're stuck. And I've even said that to her, like, look, I don't care if you don't like me, but this is my best friend. He's not allowed to go nowhere.
Well, that's after a particular incident.
Yeah. So. But flash forward to a school. We end up miscommunicating and having an issue. During A school, with everything that went on, what would you say drove you to do a lot of the things that you did in A school? To, like, pick your path and everything else like that?
Mostly just wanting to pass and get left alone so it didn't get in trouble. Managed to avoid, you know, getting in trouble while I was there, because they take time, they take money, you know, and keep you there longer. And it's no fun.
That is true, and I think me and you, we stopped communicating after the incident with the person you... Yeah, so we stopped communicating when I called you crying because I had a dream of you cheating on me, and in that particular case, it was not just a dream, it was something my subconscious was telling me, and you confirmed it, and me and you stopped talking for a while. I think we started talking again a little after A school, like I think some months later.
A few months went by.
Yeah, I think at that point you were dating the person that...
No, I did a fling with them, then went separate ways because they went to a different state than I went to. And then I was getting ready to deploy out, and that was when we talked next.
Yeah, so ultimately... With you getting deployed, let's talk about that. What were some of the things that you went through when you first got stationed to your first place? You were in a new area. You didn't have any real friends, no family. You were by yourself. You were no longer communicating with the person you were having a fling with. You weren't talking to me. You were probably still communicating with your brother and sister and your mother and father. How did it feel moving out to a whole nother state?
I moved out before, so that part wasn't really that strange. But it was nerve-wracking because you're going to a new place, like I said, don't know anybody. And all I'd been through up to that point was training, so everything was a little bit different once you're on the actual active duty side.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, mental attitude, you know, you got people that have deployed, have been in years, you know, the salty old farts and whatnot. So... Then you just pick up the rhythm, you know, best thing I can say is I jumped in, alright, let's get going doing something, beat sitting around with my twiddling my thumbs.
Well, you've always been that way. You've always been a leader and a straight up, let me do things, I don't want to just sit around. You always said that you don't like idle hands, which, ironically enough, I think you were the one who introduced me to that movie, Idle Hands. So... And the thing is, it's just like, for me, it was just like, I can honestly say, like, even for me, like, the way I am, Kyle will tell people, I am not the type of person to, like, stop loving a person unless you give me a reason to. And if I still have any kind of love for you, I'm always going to have a form of love for you. And I'm always going to worry about you. So, of course, when he got stationed at his location, I worried. I was trying to make sure he was okay. I mean, like, this is the person who was, like, the first male that I was in love with. And I think he always had to compete with my first girlfriend, Shadow, in a way. and he was still okay with that. He was all right. And ultimately, though, like, I can't remember if it was me who reached out to you first or you reached out to me right before you got deployed. Yeah, I think that's always been the case with us. Like, I have to get to a real bad point to reach out to you. And I'm like, you're the only person who can calm me down. And you gotta talk me off the ledge. So, I do remember. I had into it with my mother. And I remember. So, I called. And this was before me and my mom got on speaking terms and we had an understanding. Because my mom was still messing around with her ex-husband. And I got into it with her, and I remember calling you. And I knew you already had a lot of stress. I was worried that you were still dealing with, you know, a lot of the other craziness with your ex fling and dealing with the craziness of the military. Because I know me and you got into it a couple times prior, because I think I did try to reach out to you a few times while you were still having a fling.
Yeah.
Because I remember she was in, like, upstate New York, or you were up in upstate New York, and she was somewhere else?
I was in upstate New York, and she was in Alaska.
Yeah, and there was a whole incident where you called me, because I think you were upset, because she said she was pregnant, or possibly pregnant?
No, that was a few years later.
That was after, because you went back to New York. So, ultimately, though, I reached out to you, because I was having a bad day. And you told me you were about to get deployed. And then I remember promising to write you because I knew you weren't dating anyone. And at the end of the day, you didn't know if your dad was going to write you or your mom was because of everything going on in your family situation. Because you've always been the type of person worrying about everybody else, even, you know, me. And as much as you played off like you were like this tough guy, you were a big emotional softy. And I'm not spilling the beans on you. Don't You always been an emotional softy. You always made sure I ate, made sure I slept. Especially me, you knew I had very bad anxiety and everything else like that. I was real bad growing up, and he was one of the few people who knew how to handle it and never question. So that's the reason why me and him are still friends to this day. And to this day, I always check up on him occasionally just to see how he's doing. And this is the ex that always messages me like every year around Mother's Day to tell me Happy Mother's Day because he was the person I was supposed to have a kid with. My first kid. So when you went off to deployment, I remember telling you I was going to write you because I knew you were going to get stationed to a hotspot. So let's talk about, because mind you guys, we were still at the time, still in Iraq, pretty heavy.
Yeah, I went to Afghanistan, but yeah, at the time they were still in Iraq. Yeah. It was right around the drawdown of Iraq in 2011.
Yeah.
I believe.
What were some of the feelings you were going when you found out you were going there?
I was excited.
Why were you excited?
Being going through basic, to, you know, instill that whole, be excited for action type of mentality. You know, it's better than sitting around.
Sure.
Sort of deal.
Well, I mean, the military is mainly hurry up and wait until, you know, y'all get called to the line of duty.
Well, yeah, and I was excited that, hey, yeah, I get to go, okay, you know, I'm not just going to be what's known as a slick sleeve for people who've never deployed or haven't deployed yet. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I actually get to, you know, be helpful, you know, just not here in the United States or another base. It's, you know, an actual conflict area because they changed it from a war to a conflict at the time.
Mm.
So, you know, I was excited. And then, you know, it's like, then the whole, oh crap, you know, scared about what could happen. You know, seeing all the news reports, talking about all the bombings, shootings, you know, and all that. So it was definitely, you know, scared in there.
Yeah. Because, I mean, at the time, I think, I remember me and you discussed it. I asked you at that time, how did you feel about going there? And I was devastated. Like, even if we weren't dating and we weren't at that point where we were, you know, having any kind of relationship at that point, other than just being friends, I was still worried about possibly losing you. And I was just like, if something was to happen to you going there, you're like, I highly doubt anything's going to happen. But I was like, it's still a lot of stuff going on there. I think at that time, that girl who wrote the book, because she was a prisoner of war, I can't remember her name.
I don't know, but I was there when the Kandahar City jailbreak happened.
Oof.
So where 400 and some odd prisoners tunneled out. So that was a fun time.
Yeah, and I know you were definitely devastated with a lot of that. Now, during that time you were there, like, were you worried? Were you scared? How was your anxiety? Were you afraid that you would never come home?
For the first couple weeks for me, it was, okay, you know, this is new, this is strange, and it was Christmas, and I was sitting down to eat, and the alarm goes off, and, you know, everybody hits the ground because rockets and stuff are coming in. And then after that, you know, talking with a couple of the other people, it's like, you know, if it's your time, you're not going to hear it, you know. So, you know, it kind of pushes it out of your mind for the most part. And you don't really think about it until, oh, hey, there's rockets coming in or what have you.
Yeah. So here's the deal. When you're at those moments, and I know that you may probably be able to attest to the other people who were there at the time, getting those care packages
made the world of difference.
Yeah.
Everybody, if, you know, we noticed somebody in our platoon didn't get up one, we tried to share stuff out of ours with them, you know, taste of home and stuff like that.
Yeah, I hear that it always makes a world of difference, and it goes through it. Like, I remember I used to send you care packages. I would still send you letters. And I mean, like, even at this time, we weren't dating, and I was invested, like, in another relationship at that point. I knew you needed that because you were somewhere where you were not feeling like, you know, you were appreciated and stuff like that. I've always done things out of the kindness of my heart for those who served in the military, because both my parents are vets as well. My mom doing the Air Force and my dad being in the Army, serving a tour in Desert Storm. My mom getting out right after 9/11 happened, like literally a couple months after 9/11 happened. And for you to be somewhere, and I knew you weren't dating anyone, and you were kind of at that point where if I die, I die. And I'm like, you're not allowed to die on me. You're like, nobody would miss me. And I'm like, no, 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 I would miss you.
I did reach that point, you know, and to this day, I still kind of have some of that mentality of, you know, the final destination, what mindset of, you know, if it's your time, it's your time. You can try and push it off all you want, but it might just happen in a worse way.
Yeah. And that's one of those things, like, you were always the negative one out of us, and I went through a lot more shit. Like, we both went through some shit, but I went through some of the bad shit, and you were always still the negative one. And I'm just like, no, 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 no. It could probably be better.
I did end up looking, you know, on the bright side. It's like, yeah, it could be worse.
Could be.
But it's not, so I'm happy about that.
True, true. So, when it came down to it, if I remember correctly, you did 2 tours, didn't you?
No, just the one.
Just the one?
Yeah, they didn't need me for the second round.
No, I think we talked about it. You were trying to sign up for a second one, and then they told you they didn't need you.
Yep, I was standby.
Yeah. So during that time when you found out that you weren't going to be able to do a second tour, what were some of the emotions knowing that you were going to go home?
Well, it was more sad because I wanted to stay, you know, tax-free money, come on. You know, I don't have any bills aside from minimal stuff at the time because I was single. So, you know, I was saving a whole bunch of money, and that's the way I was looking at it. You know, I was already used to things there at that point. And, you know, coming back on R&R, you realize how much things are more stressful here because over there it's okay. I need to worry about food, sleep, and security, and that was it. You know, the rest of the stuff was minimized to an extent, at least in my case. You know, I heard about a couple of the guys being married, their wife taking the kid, taking the money, and moving out of the house. It's for Jody.
Oh. So the thing that I always wondered, and it baffled me a lot of the times when it came down to military personnel, like, you guys are basically a close-knit family. You guys are brothers in arms, and honestly, going out there, you guys have each other. And that's really it. And now when it comes to, especially when it comes to possibly going out into an area that is kind of a restricted area or a combat zone, how would you say that your relationships with those people who are around you kind of are affected? Like, you may come in not really caring for these people, but by the end of the tour, these people are like family to you.
Oh yeah, you definitely end up bonding. You know, it didn't matter what your skin color was, you ended up bonding. That was all there was to it, because all you had was the person to your left and right, same for them. And if they were having an issue, you know, you end up noticing them because you're with them almost 24/7.
Yeah. And honestly, at the end of the day, I like I said, I support anybody who can go into the military and put their lives on the line to sacrifice for the country, for the nation. And this is one of those things where, like, I respect military personnel a lot more than other people in uniform. Because you guys have a bond. You actually have a sacrifice. You are actually doing something. You don't see color. You don't see black and white. You see, this is somebody who I need to protect. This is somebody that is out to harm my country. That's how they look at it. And that's it.
And like when we got back, you know, we'd go over to each other's places, and, you know, those with wife and kids, we, you know, if we were guys, we were called uncles, and if they were female, they were called aunts, because we were family. You know, we didn't, oh, this is so-and-so, you know, no, it's, this is Uncle Kyle, this is Aunt, you know, Jenny or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they needed help watching the kid, you know, as long as you were good with kids, you know.
That's usually how it went. So coming back from your tour, going from having, you know, possible raids above your head, but, you know, nearly missing and everything else like that, coming back from that kind of environment to come back to the U.S. and have to go back to a regular station, how do you think that affected you?
The transition for me was particularly tough. I ended up taking up drinking, which is fairly common to deal with.
I remember.
Alright, leave me in my 2 a.m. phone calls and love you.
Oh, I mean, I told you, if my line is open, I will always be there for you. You know this.
So, you know, it wasn't the best solution, but it's what I understood. Coming back, there was a lot of anxiety. Like, for me, loud boom sounds would trigger it. I'd look for my weapon, look for a safe place, you know, in case more was coming. You know, it was just the door slamming down the hall. You know, so at the time, I didn't realize what it was. Eventually, I did get help for the drinking through the Army Substance Abuse Program.
And this is when you were still enlisted, correct?
Yes, I was about 8 months after getting back, because I remember being summertime and realizing, you know, at that point I was drinking a fifth a day and working and doing PT and everything.
So the thing is that I always wondered is, like, when you leave that environment, do they give you time to get yourself composed? Do they give you time to actually sit down and, you know, decompress after something like that?
No, it's straight back to work after maybe 2 or 3 days, you know, so you can get settled and get caught back up on family life, or, you know, get settled in the barracks. Then it's back to work, unloading, receiving shipments, helping other flights come in, you know, the whole ordeal. It's that go-go mentality, you know, no time to rest.
And do you think that, honestly, a regular person who is not trained for that could be able to deal with that on a day-to-day basis? Be able to go to that kind of environment and then come back to work the next day like it's nothing?
They might out of habit, but they definitely, even military, have issues processing and dealing with what they see, hear, and go through.
Would you honestly say, because the thing is that a lot of misconception is with military, especially during basic training, that they try to break you down emotionally so you become emotionless.
Oh, they try and kill a lot of your, like, your triggers, like your anger, your sadness. They try and not so much, they'll break them down, but it's more so that they level out and don't spike during a stressful situation. Because, you know, if you have incoming rockets, you don't want people running around like chickens with their head cut off. Oof. You want to be calm, kind of collected, you know, have an idea of what to do, where to go, so that there's not more casualties. So that's, it's more of suppressing the other emotions. But in the interim, you know, if you're, a lot of emotions get changed into anger.
Yeah, because you're not properly channeling every other emotion. I feel like a lot of people,
you know, easy to handle, you know, you go punching bag, you know, exercise, you can use anger for that. And that's what ends up happening with a lot of soldiers.
Is that they end up just channeling, so instead of being sad or, you know, have anxiety or depression, they get angry and then they can just go work out. And honestly, how effective do you think that would be for anybody? Because in my personal opinion, as a civilian, that is not effective in our everyday life. is channeling and making it anger, because that will make people, you know, abusive. They'll make them, you know, abuse alcohol. They'll make them, you know, handsy and things of that nature if they're not properly channeling emotions.
Which is why you see, hear about a lot of the issues that soldiers are having, is because then they medicate with alcohol, and then they come down off of that while they're at work sometimes. So it's just a back and forth vicious cycle. And while it's not actively discouraged to seek mental health while in uniform,
mm-hmm.
there have been cases of repercussions of going to mental health. So, like, in my experience, you know, they kind of look down on me for seeking help or, quote, being weak about it. But at the time, you know, I was spending $40 a day for a fifth of alcohol and drinking during the day to get through the day.
Yeah, no, and that's honestly not healthy. Me and you had a long discussion about that at that time. And I told you how much I wanted you to stop it. And I was like, at the end of the day, you're grown and we're not dating anymore. But I worry about you and I want you to live out. And you were like, if I die, I die. And I'm like, here you go again with that.
You know, that's kind of what happened. You know, I wasn't in a great place. You know, I didn't recognize it, and everybody else around me was in a similar mood and emotions and everything like that. So it's very hard to recognize that you might need help when everyone around you is very similar.
Yeah. And the thing is, I kept telling you that something was wrong, but I always kept telling you is, I can't make you see what I see. So ultimately, I think when you did start transitioning away from that and you noticed that there was a problem, what made you finally realize that you needed to change?
It was more of a friend ended up having an issue and ended up having to go to the hospital and spend some time in the hospital. And that kind of was the wake-up call that, hey, I need to do something because something's not right.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, like, until you actually have something life-changing happen, a lot of people don't change their habits. We are creatures of habits. And even with military personnel, they're creatures of habit. They're trained to have the same kind of habits. And honestly, there's a lot more advocates out there now in the military who are fighting to help people with mentalities, especially because of the fact to be in, there was a difference in the training before a certain year. Like when my parents were in, the training was different than when you went in for boot camp, and other people, even with my ex-husband, when he went in, it was a different training. And I mean, like, honestly, I feel for you guys, for what you guys have to go through, what you endure. And honestly, I think the drinking is what made you go down a lot of those bad paths that you went down in the military.
Well, I mean, in 2014, it did end up in me trying to take my own life. So,
yeah, you know, I remember
not having healthy coping mechanisms because I didn't seek proper help.
Yeah, I remember that call, and you told me you were
goodbye.
Yeah. As a person who battles suicidal thoughts, I know the signs. I know the key words to look for when somebody is battling or they're teetering. And him telling me that he always loved me when we haven't said I loved each other in a long time was it. And I couldn't get a hold of him at all. And then I finally get a call. I cried because I thought I lost my best friend. And we've always made a promise to each other that no matter what, if we were on the edge to call each other, because at the end of the day, we both experience somebody very near and dear to us taking their lives and nobody being there when they needed it most. So me and Kyle has always made a promise to each other, if there was anybody in the world that we could reach out to, we know for a fact we would reach out to other people. We would reach out to each other. And
that particular note, it hits pretty close to home because all the NFL draft and stuff just passed, and a very good friend of mine, he was 20 years old, wasn't even 20, his birthday was this month. He he was having issues, and he made passing jokes, but it didn't really click. He left from watching draft with us one night and came back. I asked if he was okay because he left his charger, and he said, "Yeah, I'm fine," but had a kind of faraway, glazed look. Didn't think anything of it, went to bed, woke up the next day, saw that he was up crazy early for a Saturday and having drank the night before. I should have asked if he wanted to go with me on the trip I was going to go on, but I didn't. You know, I asked if he was okay, a few basic questions. It was early, so ended up going on my trip, and halfway back, get a call that he had shot himself that morning.
Yeah, so, I remember. I think this was a little bit around the time that me and you met, because that was part of the reason you were going to move, because that just happened. And then,
this is a different one. This was a few years later.
Yeah, this is a different one. I remember this one, though.
No, the other one was right before I met you.
Yeah, the other one was right before you met me, and then you told me about this friend later down the line, but typically when you battle certain emotions, you tend to know signs. I tell people about the incident back in December of 2019. Was it 2019? Or 2018? Was it 2019? It was the day I text everybody. Mine wasn't intentional. It was just more like I wanted the pain to stop. And then by the time I realized it was too late, I was texting everyone that I wanted to know that I loved them. And I remember you blowing my phone up. And I blacked out. I don't recall anything. I was in the middle of texting my parents. But I texted everybody else but my parents. And you were the one that picked up that something was wrong.
Well, like you said, we've known each other long enough. There's certain telltale signs.
And that wasn't intentional. The thing is, like, I tell people, like, you don't know what a person is going through. And Kyle's one of those people, and I can tell you firsthand, he will make jokes. He will smile, he'll be straight up with you, he'll make you laugh, he'll say a lot of stuff. He is what I consider the epitome of a strong friend, where, you know, that person who's always the center of attention, make you laugh, you know, the life of the party. And even if he's very introverted, when he's in a group setting, he could be the center of attention. And he will bring all my friends from high school remember Kyle. Like, that's it. Everybody remembers him.
Motorcycle, red beard, and long red hair, you know.
And then he had the pickup truck with the bass that everybody would ride in when I turned 18. And we were acting crazy, leaving clubs and stuff, and blasting techno music every fucking where. Like, yes, I remember. And it was just like, we all knew. The thing is, like, as long as he was in the military, I can tell when he wasn't okay. But that's what you do when you care about somebody. You kind of just pick up when something's not right. And when it comes to military personnel, like, the people that you're around a lot, do y'all typically pick up when something's not right with the people you're around?
Yeah. Just tell their body language tends to change. Like, they do things a little more frustrated. It seems like they're more frustrated while they're doing something. They're trying to rush. Stuff like that. You know, they're a little more irritable, or they seem kind of down or deep in thought.
So even then, what it says with a lot of people who are suffering, like, depression, and they're having, like, one of those manic or panic moments, they tend to be more frantic, they tend to be a little bit more happy than usual, sometimes they seem a little bit more adventurous, ready to go up and, like, want to jump out or go shopping sprees, you know, sporadic.
Yeah. And if it's out of the usual, we tend to pick up on it and try and get them help before it got to, you know, too bad. Like, my situation, it was a snap moment. You know, something just clicked in my head, and that's when I decided to do it. Whereas, you know, a lot of people, they'll build up to it, I've already thought about it long enough and over the years that, you know, I already had a plan set in motion when I texted you that.
Yeah, and you text me and I freaked out and then you didn't respond to me and then I freaked out even more and I was blowing up your phone every day for 3 days until you finally called me back. I'm like, yeah, I just left the hospital, so casually about it. I'm just like, what?
It was 10.
So, oh yeah, because they had you
inpatient.
Yeah. They would not let you contact nobody, no nothing. And I was so upset. Yeah, and I wasn't, at that time, I think somebody else was your emergency contact, but your mom and dad were still talking to me, but they didn't, I don't even think they knew what was going on with you.
They had a brief chat with my current wife.
At that time, yeah.
Yeah.
You went through so much stuff in the military. I remember some of the stresses that you went through with some of the people you dated, some of the issues you went with being away from your family.
Your first wife.
Oh, Lord Jesus. That was technically your fling that you came back to later. And I mean, like,
you know, she got stationed in Alaska. I got stationed in New York. I get deployed. She gets deployed to the same place. It almost seemed like fate to me at that time that we should be together. Yeah, and then some other things happened.
Well, we've always been firm believers that everything happens for a reason. People come into your lives for a reason, whether it's a lesson or whether it's, you know, long term. And in that particular case, I already knew I didn't like her because she was flirting with you and you were already engaged to me. But I digress. It takes two to tango. And I've forgiven you for that years ago. And I said that you're always going to be in my life and I always want you to be happy and healthy. So I'm always going to want you to be happy and healthy despite you making bad decisions and being with the wrong people. But we're not going to talk about that either. But with you getting out of that, this is before you had your daughter. When you found out your wife was pregnant and you were still in the military, how did you feel about it? What were some of the anxieties you were starting to go into? Especially since Father's Day is coming up next month. What are some of the thought process that was going through your head at that point? I know up to that, even with you being married, you still had that mentality that if I die, they'll be okay. They have enough money. I put enough money to the side. They'll be okay. Now you have a little one coming in the picture.
It really wasn't until she was born that I started changing with my mentality on that. I mean, I still have, you know, if shit happens, then it happens, but not gonna stress about it. And I don't actively go out and, you know, go drifting in a car or a truck or a military vehicle or, you know, speeding down the highway because it's fun being an adrenaline junkie. So, you know, I do go play in the mud with Kylie because she likes seeing the mud fling around the truck.
I promise you that is literally your twin. And his daughter is the most precious thing in the world. And I think she has all his crazy mentality, but she's the only woman that has ever got him to calm down. And me and him were dating for like years. And I could not get him to calm down. And when he says that he was drifting in a car, he did it. And it was to the point.
All the time. Are you kidding?
I mean, I wasn't in the incident where he called me and said, I could have died today. I drifted. The car was facing one way, but the car was going the opposite way. And I had no control because the road was slippery. And I'm just like, and you call me and tell me you almost died. Why? He was, when I tell you guys that Kyle was the most careless adrenaline junkie I ever met, he would literally will call me or text me or send me a photo of him slicing up his arm because a piece of metal cut it open. And I'm like...
That was an accident. That was not me looking for adrenaline. I was pissed about that because then I had to clean up blood.
And it was a huge thing that I told him he needed to go to the emergency room. He's like, I can just take this up. I was like, go to the fucking emergency room, please. And then this little version of himself came in, and she's the sweetest little thing, and I can see all of his personality in her, and she's just literally an angel that came and humbled him. And I knew that when you found out she was pregnant, I know that there was a moment you were like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, definitely a oh shit moment, as it were. Thinking, okay, I've created life and I have to find a way to take care of it and provide and raise it so, you know, it doesn't become feral child.
Well, I mean, when I was pregnant, you kind of felt the same way, but to the extent we came to a mutual agreement to not carry that to term. And ultimately, it beat away more at me than it did you, especially later down in life, with everything I went through.
A lot for quite a number of years until my daughter was born.
You never told me that.
And things I keep to myself. You know, that's just kind of how I was.
You never told me that. Like, if you would have told me that us making that decision ate away at you as much as it did me, we probably would have a child at this point.
At the time, we felt we made the right decision. That's all we can go with, and we have to move forward.
Yeah, and that's true, and we did. And ultimately, yeah, I'm still bothered by the decision to this point, and I'm 30 now. So, I mean, ultimately, I still reminisce about it around Mother's Day. I get sad about it. I ultimately get upset about, you know, around the time that it did happen. But I realize at the end of the day, I'm more emotion driven. And, you know, I have a lot more issues now, fertility wise. And that's why I hate that I made that decision. But everything happens for a reason. And we're still going to this day. But your daughter now has everything that our child would have had, and you humbled and got everything done to be a better father for her now. And you're still a part of her life. There was a lot of issues that happened after she was born too that you had to deal with. And during that time, how did you process the emotions during everything involving her and revolving around her?
It was most definitely a stress-inducing time, and that's where I got a lot of my gray hair. She was in the hospital for almost 45 days because she was born little, and it just, you know, if one thing goes wrong, she could pass, and it was just one of those things.
They're fragile human beings, and this is before, I think at this point you were still in the military. This is, I think, where they were working to discharge you out.
Yeah, for medical issues.
Yeah, because at this point you did a lot of reckless things that were finally catching up with your body. So,
just being in the military is enough. You can go in with a perfect body and you'll come out half broken at least.
Oh yeah, most definitely. My ex-husband medically retired because he had hyperparathyroidism because of too much radiation exposure in the bottom of the fucking, you know, ships.
Yeah, so it's just the military in general that wears your body out doing the same thing and pushing and pushing and pushing. You know, it just wears your body out and your mind. So, you know, with the mind, you can kind of get therapy and get help with it. At the time when my daughter was in the hospital, I was in therapy, so I was talking to my therapist about it and all the stressors and ways to help and cope with it and process it. And that was the biggest thing.
Yeah, so when it came down to it and stuff, and you knew you were about to get in the military, now, when it came to the point where they were like, yeah, you're going to get out the military, that, I know, brings a lot of people down. I remember how I told you with my mom when she got out of the military, I remember the stress that she went through where she didn't want to get out. This is all she knew.
Yeah.
Even my ex-husband, when he was starting to get discharged from the military, he went through a serious depression spike where he was like, I wanted to retire. I didn't want to leave.
Yeah, and I had that as well, but I also looked at it as, you know, I was being medically discharged, so I was going to get some money out of it. So I, at the time, I was like, okay, I'll be fine being a stay-at-home dad, taking care of my daughter, you know, seeing all the first steps, first words, stuff like that, you know, so I was more excited about that and not having to go to the field, being deployed, missing everything. So I looked on the brighter side. At the time, I learned to look on the brighter side of things. Like, yeah, okay, this chapter of my life is closing. Let's start the next one and see where it goes.
Yeah, so you guys can now hear where I get my whole learning the chapters and going through life, because he actually taught me this. Like, I used to not look this way when I was a lot younger. When I first met him, he can tell you I was not mentally or emotionally stable. I was literally transitioning from an abusive household to a semi-stable household, and I really wasn't the best person. And he just kind of conditioned me, like, to look at a little bit different and a different perspective. And it was him, between him and Alex, I don't think I would have survived after leaving my mom's if it wasn't for those two. Like,
no, that was definitely a rough time in your life, to put it nicely.
Yeah, and I mean, it took almost a decade to get over, like, well over a decade to even get to where I'm at now. So for a lot of people who tell me that, oh, you are XYZ, I'm like, it took me, I am very humble. Like,
you know, they don't see the dark days that you go through to get to that point. They just see your success and what you've accomplished so far.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know the battles I still go through. And despite everything that I've ever gone through, I've always still tried to be a nice person. I've always tried to be a helper, a healer, even to those who don't deserve to be helped or healed. And I've not changed that about myself. I've always been that way. I've always wanted to help other people. And there's been plenty of times that you done sat down and told me, like, you need to stop helping these people. They're not going to change.
That comes down to the, you know, if people want help, they'll take it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're just going to listen to your words and go one ear out the other and continue what they're doing, just like nothing ever happened.
Creatures of habit, repeating the same cycles. You're going to be stuck in a loophole.
What about definition of insanity?
Repeating the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results.
And that's what ends up happening is, you know, you end up going crazy because of it.
Exactly.
So and, to speak.
And ultimately, though, I have to definitely commend you, because even when you got out of the military, I was worried for a moment there, because you were stressing about how much you were going to get paid and a lot of other stuff. And then at that time, while being out of the military, you dealt with a lot of stuff involving your medical stuff, going to the VA and scheduling for the VA.
Oh, yeah. Trying to deal with the VA system is completely different than being anything active duty. Whereas active duty, oh, I need to go see the doctor, bam, you can go see him usually that day or that morning at sick call. Anything on the weekends, you go to the hospital, what have you. But getting out, it's like, oh, I have to be, you know, proactive in my care and getting this appointment to get this checked, making sure everything's annotated, and if anything gets worse, you know, it adds a different kind of bureaucracy stress, so to speak, because it's no longer people help there that really help you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are more, definitely more now than when I got out. So they actually get you situated, you know, kind of walk you through some of the processes. So it's not like joining the army and, oh, what am I doing with this? What am I doing with that?
Yeah, because the thing is, with the VA, they've gotten a lot better over the years. And I've seen, in particular cases, when it involved my mom and it involved my dad trying to go back to the VA, it was like, literally, you would have to schedule things months in advance in order to end up getting there. And that's, even then, they might forget your appointment. Or even if you were a minute late, you lose your appointment. Would you say that it's...
I haven't experienced anything that particularly bad, but I'm also in Colorado, where the VA here is one of the better ones that I've had experience with. So
Would you say that the VA system is better depending on which state you're in?
Yes. Each state is run differently. So it makes things a lot harder. Like, say, Florida. Things are a lot harder to do and get in Florida because they have more care clinics. You know, they try and push you through that. But if your appointment's more than 30 days, you can ask for community care. But with COVID, a lot of things have been pushed and delayed, regardless of whether you're getting seen on by a civilian doctor or by the VA.
So, with that being said, the VA's gotten a lot better over the years. It's been, depending on what state you're in, depends on how the care is. And overall, with that, would you say that so people who are vets, are they getting the adequate treatment in a way, especially when it comes to the medical, mental mentality?
They are big on their mental health propaganda, pushing for, hey, mental health. Like, if you call any VA phone number at the beginning, it prompts, if you're having an emergency, call 911, call this suicide number, you know, stuff like that.
And for that, for those who are currently in the military, transitioning out of the military, and, you know, like, things of that nature, do you suggest any particular organizations or fields to go ahead and seek help if they need help medically or if they're needing help, like, mentally? Because I know there's things like, you know, Wounded Warrior that's out there, but they mainly deal with the people who have actually been hurt in war.
Lost limbs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's a ton of resources online and, you know, in person. My suggestion is to go call your local VA clinic, even if you're not out, and get something set up and be proactive about it. Don't just expect everything to transition over correctly.
Yeah, it's about being proactive and having a support system. I know that a lot of the military guys or women don't feel as though that there's a adequate way to talk to their significant others or to their family that is civilians about what's going on with them, because they feel like we don't understand. Of course, we may not understand because we're not in your shoes, but as military spouses or supporters or friends, what would be the best suggestion you would give to us civilians to make your transition in the military, out of the military, and just going into civilian life a lot easier?
Be flexible in supposed plans. Not everything's going to go exactly as it's laid out. There's going to be hiccups. You know, just try and keep looking on the bright side of it, of we'll get through it. You know, it's just, it might take a little longer.
And then when it comes down to, like, the mental health aspect, like, if we notice that something's wrong, especially if you're a spouse or if you're a best friend of somebody who's in the military and we notice something's wrong, what would be the best suggestion on how to approach somebody in the military who may be going through some distress or going through some anxiety and we want to help them, but we don't know how to approach them about it?
Mostly it's just, hey, you doing okay? Do you, you know, actually asking, because most people, unless you ask, won't offer up the information because they don't want to feel like a burden on somebody else, you know. And if you're very unsure, call your local VA clinic, you know, what have you, and ask them specifically, because, you know, they're local to you. You know, the worst thing to do would be call the cops.
Yeah, no, I feel like that would be more of a threat than anything if you call a cops or get them committed or do a wellness check. I feel like being a person who's been around a lot of military people, as well as being a military spouse at one point in time in my life, it's made me very understanding and very, to me, I've learned the best thing is do is keep that ground open. Like, hey, if you ever need me, I'm here for you. And actually keep up with that, too.
And that's a lot of veterans hear that and pretty much think it's lip service. Showing them, hey, you know, I actually mean it, you know, taking some time just to sit and talk with them, ask how their day is, you know, you get them talking, most will open up about some of the issues.
And that's just it. It's just knowing that the person's there. Even if you're just calling or texting them to say, hey, I thought about you today. I was playing a video game and thought of you. how are you doing today? And just casually just trying to spark up a conversation. And that's it. A lot of these men and women in the military, they appreciate that, especially if they're single or if they're in a transitioning in a bad point in their relationships, because a lot of that, they do bring work home, and that does bring a strain on their relationship.
Oh, very much so.
And they may, the spouse may be like, oh, you're just mad at me because I didn't do the dishes, or I didn't do this, or the kids are driving me crazy. And in all actuality, they're already stressed out at work, getting yelled at work to come home, and things are not done. And sometimes that energy is just channeled in a different way, and it gets targeted towards them because at that time they're at their breaking point.
Yeah, they're so full, they don't know how to react, so they just explode, as the saying goes.
Yeah, and honestly, I've learned to be a person of action. So if I say that I'm going to be there for you, I'm going to be there for you. So I've learned that from being around you a lot, and then also being around my family. And I've always had people break promises to me and say that they're going to be there, but not really be there. So I said, I'm not them, and I'm not going to be them. So every time that I've always told you I'm there, you knew that if you called me, I would call you right back. But then again, I've always told you if you ever needed me, I'll be there. And if I can't pick up, I will text you like, hey, are you okay? Like, literally, if I don't answer, I'll text you right back quickly. Like, are you okay? Is this an emergency? And you'll be like, no. I just wanted to talk. Okay, give me like 5 minutes. I'll be back. And that's just it. Sometimes those are the little things that matter. Military people already feel like they're doing a lot for the world. And sometimes they don't feel like they're appreciated enough. Especially when they come back and they're in civilian clothes and people belittle them or be angry with them, or in particular cases, you know, harass them. But then when they're in uniform, then they are looking at them as heroes. They go through a lot of harassment too.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Vietnam vets, you know, getting spit on and all that, it does, you know, affect even current military because they're not, you know, most don't agree with the politics behind it, but, you know, they're doing what they're told.
There's everything that's going to always have politics anywhere you go. And honestly, at the end of the day, as great as the military comes off to be, there's a lot of politics behind it. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of anxiety, depression that you guys go through. And honestly, firsthand on the spouse end, as well as the end of the actual soldier, sailor, or whatever you may be called in the military, it's a lot going on there. And just showing that you're appreciated, even if it's just a, hey, I just like being around you, and meaning that you like being around that person, it's about being genuine and just wanting to be there. I've always been a genuine person because I know what it's like being around somebody who's in the military. My mom was around the military and felt like she wasn't doing good enough as a parent. And then with you going through the military, even if me and you weren't dating through most of the time you were in the military, I've always said, I appreciate you at random and tell you how much I care about you. And then you'll hit me with the, ugh, seriously? Getting all soft on me. I was like, you know what? I love you too.
You know, yeah, that's kind of hitting it on the head, you know, and as with transitioning out in the military, everybody has a job, they know their job, they know their place, you know, where they fit into the machine, so to speak. When you get out, things can seem very chaotic. You know, everybody just doing kind of whatever, and you're just trying to handle your own situation and business.
So a little bit of a off-subject, on-subject topic, would you say the military structure is kind of similar to prison structure, where you know a routine? And then when you come out of the military or come out of prison, that you don't know what to do?
There would be some similarities. You know, in prison, you have a little bit more free time.
I mean, to a point, right?
I mean, even in solitary, you don't have to worry about people really yelling at you the same, you know. But like I said, when coming out, it's a change from a set structure, you know, time, place, you know, uniform, to, okay, you have more free will, free choice, you know, you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah. And it's weird because you're used to having that structure told when to go, when to come, when to go, when to eat, when to do this, to now you have to do it yourself. And I mean, I witnessed my mom, how depressed she was getting out of the military and how much she kept telling me if she could have stayed in, she would have stayed in.
Yeah, the lack of something, having something to do, you know, outside of moving, you know, caring for kids, gets a lot of soldiers and Marines and whatnot, because they don't have the structure and they're like, okay, now what do I do? So they start to panic a little, I've seen.
I mean, honestly, for the friends that you still have that are out of the military, if they had an opportunity to get out, do you think they would have got out?
The ones that are still in, no, they're not liking the current politics that are in the military that have become involved, which is another reason why I got out. Too much politics. It's not, you know, actual politics, but inner office sort of deal.
Yeah.
Personal politics.
For translation, politicking meaning how it's being structured.
Kissing ass to certain people to get certain jobs, get promotions. You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know sort of deal.
And honestly, even in corporate America is the same way, but I think in the military it's a little bit different. Especially when it comes down to female soldiers, it's really bad from what I've been told.
Oh, yeah. If somebody gets a particular job and they're female, even some of the guys will, and other women will be like, oh, she got that because she did X, Y, Z to so-and-so, and that's why, you know, she got that job.
Yeah, and I hear that that's what a lot of the cases, especially when it came down to a lot of female naval officers, a lot of them ending up on like certain ships and stuff like that, that was like all male, or they were like on ships that were like submarines, and having a certain title or a certain, you know, ranking, a lot of them said the only reason that person got that ranking because they did X, Y, Z with so-and-so. And I get it. But at the same time, at the time, it could be because they earned that. But that's not how they looked at it.
Like I said, people do a flash judgment and see a particular situation that might be similar to a different one. And, oh, this is probably what happened. And either they accept it and move on and just go about their day, or they make an issue of it. You know, and if somebody actually stopped and paid attention, most of the time, the people earned it.
Yeah. So, ultimately, we're going to close off with you and stuff at this point. If you can go back and do it all over again, if you could, what would you change?
Mostly getting some of the choices I made for relationships, and of obviously not trying to get hurt as much.
You would not be as reckless, basically. Would you still be in if you could do it all over again?
It's definitely an experience I don't regret. You know, it is what it is. Everybody's got a different life, you know, different experiences. It gives me stories to tell.
True. What advice would you give anybody who's in the military, thinking of going into the military or about to leave the military? So actually, let's do both. What advice would you give somebody going into the military?
Just know that the beginning part's a mind game, and just learn what you can and keep your head down.
Would you advise them to seek medical advice, especially mental advice, despite?
Yeah, definitely. You know, if you feel like you're having issues processing or coping, definitely seek out help. There's nothing wrong with it.
Okay. And would that be the same thing you would give to somebody who's currently enlisted?
Definitely, because, you know, seeing how many my friends that had friends die, I think it was 12 by suicide, you know, and most of them were still in when they did it.
You think that the reason why a lot of people don't last in marriage in the military is because of them not coping properly?
Sometimes there's a lot of infidelity is what the main issue with it is, because, you know, a soldier goes to the field, and the other person typically feels alone, they can't sit on the phone 24/7 texting I love you, so they seek it out elsewhere from others and then leave the one person, and that ends up with hurt feelings and all that.
Yeah, but I mean, it could also go both ways.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't. It does go both ways.
Yeah. But I mean, definitely seeking out advice and stuff, relationship advice, and then also mentality for your mental health would probably be the sound thing to do for if you're active. For those who are transitioning out, though.
And if, let's go back to the active real quick.
I gotcha.
if they don't want to go to mental health because, they don't want to tell their command or what have you,
mm-hmm.
go talk to the chaplain, because the chaplain, it's like a confession booth sort of deal that can't really tell unless you say you're going to harm somebody or yourself.
And, yeah.
That's a stepping stone, and go from there. And if you need mental health, then you go there.
Of course. So when it comes down to it, definitely seek out advice when it comes down for joining. And then also while you're in, especially if you feel like you're not coping properly, because alcoholism is not the best choice at the time to cope with anything.
The army is like a big frat party.
I remember you telling me that almost all the time you're drinking.
It's a weekend. Hey, what day are we drinking? The ones that have been wine.
Man, when I tell you going through like the BX, the PX, and freaking Navy, the next, you would sit here and see on a Friday them buying about 3-4 bottles of alcohol, and I'm just like, what are y'all doing? Yeah, I'm just going home and I'm drinking. You throwing a party? No, it's just gonna be me and my spouse. Wait, what? For 4 bottles? And they're not the measly bottles. These are the ones you see at the club, because they don't sell individual bottles at the next. These are those ones that have the handle.
I think Cat Williams said it in one of his stand-ups. What did the white person say? We getting fucked up.
So yes, they will be like that, and some of those higher ranking people are just as bad, and some of them will even have kids. I had a lady when I did go through the next, she had stuff for her children, and then she had about 4 or 5 different bottles for herself, and I was like, ma'am, are you okay? Like, I wanted to ask her if she was okay, but that was just a normal, her liver I think didn't exist anymore. But I mean, hey, live your best and fullest life. And she came every week. Every time, every 1st and 15th, she would come and re-up on bottles.
So, definitely that, Right now, I'm 8 months sober, soon to be 9.
I'm so proud of you.
So, alcohol definitely didn't help. It dulled the pain for a while, but it still came out.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, it's easy to go into what makes us numb versus anything. And you know me, I know how to shut off my emotions and become numb. Do I like it? No. Have I done it recently? A year. It's been a year. But it typically happens, and you know how I feel. I like feeling. I like expressing my emotions. And I know with alcoholism, it was easy for you to just drown away in alcohol.
Well, live your life inside the bottle.
Yeah.
As the saying goes.
And I mean, like, honestly, at the end of the day, how do you cope with everything now, being a civilian?
I'm currently in mental health, so, I mean, that's definitely a big part. Having an outlet was the biggest thing for me. Someone to vent to that didn't connect with everybody else. So, a party to completely separate.
Somebody who was basically biased to everybody else.
Yeah.
And it was an outside source. And I always tell people it's sometimes good to seek that outside source. Even if I tell you all the time that I'm always here for you, I know that you can't come to me about everything, because I know some people that are in your life that you're venting about. And I have my personal opinion, but at the same time, I sit here and I say, you know what? I've always been able to sit here and see every side, even if I may not like the person you may be venting about or talking about. So, ultimately, though, For those who are transitioning out, always seek advice. There's nothing wrong with seeking a mental health. There's nothing wrong with seeking some guidance. There's nothing wrong with trying to, you know, reach out. Well, don't bury yourself in alcohol. Just don't do that. Oh, yeah, better yourself. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part. My bad. So, yes, definitely better.
Ask for some help instead of ending up behind bars, you know, in the hospital. So, there's a lot more issues that can arise without seeking help. And they cost a lot of money, usually.
Yeah. And the military really don't cover mental health stuff too often.
No, the active duty, well, definitely, they pay for everything for the actual soldier. So
the spouse, no.
The spouse can be iffy.
I didn't get nothing. I had to pay that out of pocket.
You know, there's quite a few that, you know, it'll cover most of it, but there's a copay. So, definitely get help. It's easier than, you know, this is not one of those, oh, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission situations. It's get the permission and go get help.
Yeah. And I honestly, there's a lot of people out in the world that would love to see you guys continue thriving and surviving and being there. You may not think that your life is important, but a lot of the times there's a lot of people out there who appreciate you being safe and sane and everything. And then even living your life in a bottle actually can do more damage than good. Even if it's a good coping mechanism at the time for you, or what you may think is a good coping mechanism, it's not really helping your work. It's not helping better the situation. It's not actually productive.
No, alcohol is the only one that will actually kill you if you try and go cold turkey after being a heavy alcoholic.
Yeah.
Out of every drug that we have.
Other than, you know, antidepressants, because that's not fun either.
Well, the come down from those is different, but, you know, this, it doesn't give you suicidal thoughts. It actually will kill you because your body goes into shock.
True. And honestly, at the end of the day, a lot of things that we go through in life is not worth being lost in a bottle. And I always tell people, like, the seek guidance, find a good source, good, you know, support system. And if people really want to be there a part of your life and they show signs that they're going to be there a part of your life, take that to value. And like I said, Kyle can attest to this. I've always been a firm believer. And when I've told people in my podcast, if you ever need somebody to talk to vent to, it doesn't matter what time it is, my phone is always on. My ringer is always on for a reason, because I never know. That might be the call of you needing to have somebody to be there and be an ear and talk to you.
You know, there's a saying, I think I actually told you the other day, you've survived 100% of the days of your life so far. Whether good, bad, indifferent, ugly, you're still here.
Yeah. And I honestly, I know if I'm one of those, there's other people out there when they tell you, if you ever need me, I'm going to be there. And they mean it. If I'm one, I'm pretty sure there's others out there. And there's a lot of people out there creating communities, just like I'm trying to create a community and a resource for people to be able to reach out and talk and be there. And there's so many resources out in the world that you can be able to reach out to if you feel as though that you have nowhere else to go, nowhere else to turn. And there's so many resources out there for our military. If you check the VA website, they have a lot of resources for out there for those who are battling depression, battling anxiety, battling financial situations. Even USAA, Navy Federal, they help you with those transitions into the culture shock. And they even give advice, which I didn't realize that USAA will help you when you're starting new transitions or stuff levels in your life.
Yeah, that's only been recently, the past 3-4 years, that they've gotten really into helping people like that. Beforehand, it was, best of luck.
Yeah, because they realize the suicide rate is very, very high for those who are retired. And it's very high, especially with the newer generation and dealing with anxiety and depression. So I hope somebody out there listens to this episode, especially if you are in the military, you're active, or you're transitioning from being active to, you know, civilian life. And even my weekend warriors, those out there, if you need help and you need guidance, please seek out the proper resources. Go to the VA website, look up the different sources that they have, reach out to different outreach programs that are out there that are willing to help. Even my community that I have created for people who are looking for a safe space to be able to vent and to be themselves and express themselves and just have someone to talk to, or even finding those close people who want to be there and a part of your life. Those people want to be there because they care about you. And there, it's not a burden. It's, I get, people go through things in life, and even with me, I've gone through everything under the sun. And no matter what I've gone through, I've always been there for those who I've said, if you ever need me, call me. It does not matter what I'm going through. Call me.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to move something heavy with more than one person.
It is. It is a lot easier. Having a village, it's not just about having a village to raise a child. It's the same thing to deal with mental health. It takes a village. It takes a support team, especially with those coming out of the military. You guys are not alone. You guys don't think because we are civilians and we've never been there, we've never gone through it, that we don't understand what you may go through, that you may have PTSD, that you may have anxiety. The PTSD may be different for us, especially if you dealt with poverty, lived in the hood, dealt with, you know, gunshots, being robbed. You still have a form of PTSD. The PTSD may not be the same, but we went through some kind of trauma and we can relate. And it's about being there and having a resource. And if you ever need a resource, like I say this to everyone, you can reach out to me. You can reach out to the different resources that the VA have to offer. There is actually military spouse groups that are out there that actually help with military spouse who are dealing with not knowing how to reach out to their spouse. There is a lot of other resource groups out there that help out with military men and women who are battling depression because they know that this is becoming an ongoing issue. So there is a lot of resources out there. It's just a matter of doing the research. And even if you want to reach out to me on any of my social medias, on Twitter, B_REIKO, my Instagram, Lady_Reiku, or Twisted Reiku for Facebook, I can be able to help you out, give you the resources that you need to find the proper resources to help you through that transition if you don't know who else to talk to, who else to seek guidance from, because it is okay, even for you guys, as soldiers, to not be okay. It's okay. You don't have to be Iron Man every day. So, I mean, I appreciate my guest today, Kyle, for coming and talking about his time in the military and his time of going through the ups and downs of joining during the time that he did serve, his tour, being away from people. And honestly, talking about it, would you feel like you would have made it without having the resources you had?
Probably not. And, you know, when I got in, they were just really coming up with mental health. And they've come a long way in the last 10 years. So, you know, times have changed. The commands aren't supposed to, you know, look down upon it. You know, more people are higher ranking or getting seeking mental health and realizing, you know, that they don't have to live that way anymore.
Yeah. So honestly, use your resources. Don't let nobody bully you to avoid mental health, because at the end of the day, it's more detrimental. Your brain, your mind is your computer. And if you don't take care of your computer, your memory, your space, it affects everything else in your body. So at the end of the day, definitely seek out the mental health. Reach out to your resources. If you don't know where to go, if you're active duty, still reach out to the local VA. And
the chaplain, you know, that's going to be should be one of your first contacts. You know, don't have to be in your chain of command. Chaplains will give you everything you need, even escort, well, you know, walk you through it and help you out.
Yes. And at the end of the day, like I tell people all the time, even those in the military, we appreciate you so much for everything that you do, what you go through, for those who have served, those who are currently veterans. Thank you so much for everything that you do. And it's never too late to seek guidance, to seek help for your mental health, because you are very precious to somebody in the world. If you may not think you're precious to anyone, you are precious to somebody. And somebody's out there worried about you.
You know, when I had to do a military funeral for my buddy who shot himself, and, you know, the whole chapel was completely filled, you know, didn't realize that there's 100 people there that cared about him.
Especially those who are military and their brother in arms, a lot of those people still care about you. No matter if you guys separate and go to different stations, they all still care. And it's a family. You guys create a family with each other.
It doesn't matter if you even serve together. You know, go to your local DAV or VFW. You can find plenty of people to talk to if you really need it. Plus, you're at a bar. You know.
We just talked about not drowning your lives in a bottle, Kyle, and then you talk about a bar.
But it's easier. Some people need the liquid lubricant to get them started talking about their issues. And, you know, okay, it's another veteran. They might have, you know, might be advice, you know, some advice, something, and listening ear. You know, they understand military.
Yeah. And I mean, oof. Mikhail, you're amazing. I appreciate you so, so much. Everything that you do, everything that you have done, and everything that, you know, you've gone through serving our country, all the advice that you're giving out, even if you don't do podcasts, you being on my podcast today to talk about mental health for the veteran standpoint. And I appreciate you so much for that. And for those who are still tuning in, those who are still listening, those who are going to be listening to this on Sunday when it drops on all the other platforms, just remember my motto from your friendly neighborhood witch. Before I actually go into that, Kyle, is there anything you want to close on?
No, that pretty well covered it, you know, except for it's one person's experience. You know, your mileage may vary, but keep trying.
Don't give up. That's basically it. So, from your friendly neighborhood witch, my friendly reminder to you guys is it is okay to not be okay. Self-love is always the best love. Self-care is the best care. And I will see you guys next month for Men's Mental Health Awareness Month, as well as for Father's Day and Pride Month. Seek out help if you need help. Don't let no one halfway love you. Continue being strong. Feel every emotion. And if you are upset, vocalize why you're upset. If you are sad, vocalize why you're sad. If you need to cry, cry. But don't let it bottle up. Don't let it turn into anger and then it turn into something worse, because you are very important. You are valuable. And we want to see you continue being around. With that being said,
can I say one more thing?
Yes.
Crying in a bar over a beer is a lot easier than crying in jail.
And that, folks, is where we're going to end this with Kyle's lovely note of crying at a bar with other people is better than crying in jail. So have a wonderful weekend. Remember to detox, and I will see you guys on the next episode on June 11th. Thank you guys for tuning in. Bye.